Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the podcast for ambitious agency leaders. This season is all about Umbraco, the friendly CMS. Join your host, Barry O'Kane, as he talks to web agency leaders and Umbraco experts about the challenges and opportunities that a specific technology like Umbraco brings to our agencies.
Welcome to Happy Porch Radio Season 2. In Season 1, we focused on building long-term success for our agencies. We covered retainers, building repeat business, growth-driven design, and much, much more. Season 1 was a lot of fun, and I hope you got as much value from it as I did. And if you haven't already, please go and check it out at happyporchradio.com. Season 2, however, is all about Umbraco in the web agency ecosystem. In particular, I'm interested in how powerful open-source technologies like Umbraco fit into and impact our agencies. So I'll be speaking to agency leaders, developers, designers, and Umbraco experts about the business challenges and the opportunities, the people and the community, and much more. And I'm really looking forward to sharing their stories in future episodes. However, to kick the season off, let's start at the beginning. Niels is the founder and the chief unicorn of Umbraco, and I spoke to him about how it all began back in the early 2000s, how Umbraco has changed and grown over the years, and his vision for the future. As usual, all the links and notes from the episode are on happyporchradio.com. Hi, Niels, and welcome to Happy Porch Radio. Thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
As you know, this series of the Happy Porch Radio was going to be all about Umbraco, and specifically about Umbraco from the business sense, how it fits into design agencies, creative agencies, and the growing and ever-growing impact Umbraco is having in this in our world. But before we get into that, what might be fun is if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself, and we can talk a little bit about what the history of Umbraco, where it came from.
I'm Niels. I started the Umbraco project, I guess, close to 15 years ago now. Self-taught developer, you know, the cliche about getting a Commodore 64 as an eight-year-old and take it from there. More interested in the way that people interact with the software rather than the technical aspect, so to speak. That's kind of my background, and it also influenced how Umbraco works.
I know you've told this story in multiple places, how Umbraco grew almost by accident out of your, when you were freelancing way back in what I think was the early days for me as well, in the early 2000s. Is that an accurate story still? Is that how it happened for real?
Yeah, totally. There's never been a business plan or something like that. I guess like everybody else, I started my own CMS back in the early 2000s. I had been involved with two other CMSs prior to that. I was freelancing. I was frustrated with the products out there, found them either limiting in the what could be done design-wise, user experience-wise on the final website, or I found those that was flexible, extremely complex, and not that user-friendly. And at the same time, I was a quite horrible consultant, really bad at selling my hours. So if I shouldn't lose too many money, it was kind of crucial that there wasn't too much support once I delivered the website. So that was also a great motivation in making sure that the system was as intuitive as possible. It was never the intention that it should be a real big product. Definitely never the intention that it should grow to be the biggest CMS in the Microsoft space. But back then, this was very early, around 2002, 2003. I was in a shared office space together with a lot of other creatives, developers, etc. And these started to use Umbraco as well. It wasn't open source back then, but there wasn't a license fee or anything. And, you know, the designers helped with making the admin part or the back office, as we call it, look better. There was developers that was much better than me, so they say, hey, if we do like this, it will perform better. There was also a really good Friday bars, and you know, one Friday I might had a beer too much, so I blogged that Umbraco would be open source because that felt right. That's the very compact story of how Umbraco then became open source.
That must have been a fairly big watershed moment looking back on it. Did it feel like that at the time, that open source would be so significant to the success of Umbraco and the building of a community and all of the things that have come out of that decision? Or was it just, hey, this is a cool thing to do?
I don't know if it was a cool thing to do, but it felt right. And I think it's one of the things that has followed Umbraco throughout the story, that one of the very central part of the decision-making is, does this feel right? Would I be happy if I go to work tomorrow and we've done this? And then to answer your question, it basically just felt right. And, you know, it wasn't now it's open source and then boom, it exploded. Not at all. I think a big part of the reason why Umbrago became a success was a lot of persistence. I mean, when it was released, we were definitely not one of the best systems out there, but we were one of those that believed so much in the product vision that we kept on going. I think it took like 6 or 7 months before we reached 1,000 downloads. And I remember coming back to my my wife, you know, arms over my head saying, we got 1,000 downloads now. And, you know, today we have more than 1,000 installs every single day. It just grew nice and quiet. But the first couple of years was really tough. We're out of Denmark, and Denmark is very much a Microsoft country. You know, all the agencies use Microsoft technology. And we thought, hey, now we got a system. It's easier to use than the other products. It's more flexible. It's open source, so it's free. I mean, these agencies, they must love it. It was early days of the economic boom in Europe and in the world in general. So all these agencies, they were so busy. We approached them saying, look, the other systems, they cost 10, 20, even more, $30,000 per license. And, you know, rather than paying a license fee, you could turn that into ours that brings more value to your clients, because it's not that your clients will have a lower budget because you pick something that's open source, but it means that you can spend for $30,000 or $50,000 more consulting hours into your products or projects, which means, you know, better design, better UX, closer attention to details. But they were so busy, and, you know, their clients had, you know, huge budgets. We went to these meetings. They were like, you know, we don't have time to learn new stuff, and our clients have plenty of money. If it wasn't because we, those people involved in the early days, had such a great passion for what we did, it would just have been end of story. But then, you know, year by year, the community grew. The product got much more solid over the years. Sometimes I joke and saying we were very recession compatible. So when the recession actually came, you know, all these agencies, they started to have plenty of time, and the clients cut the budgets, and then Umbrago was super polished at that time, so it was a perfect fit. Of course, a lot of persistence and a lot of luck and timing.
You say luck and persistence, obviously they have an impact, but I was building custom CMSs back in that time as well, and I'm very familiar with the stories and the kind of pain you were describing there. But also that sticking to that vision, and you can see that passion and that energy in the Umbrago community today as well, and things like the tagline, the friendly CMS and so on. I think it's more than that persistence and luck is what I'm saying. I think that underlying, it's interesting that you say that came right from the start, that the feeling and the wanting to do the something that feels good or you're proud of and that fits with the vision. I think that's actually really powerful in itself.
Yeah, but it wasn't, I'm very confident that that's a huge part of the success today, but it wasn't conscious, if that makes sense. It just sort of happened. Then over the years, we've been more and more conscious about it. Ironically, as the sort of project grew and grew, you know, we didn't coin the friendly CMS ourselves. It was actually a guy called Hudson Moore from an agency in England, the United Kingdom, who you know, came to us and said, look, guys, you're the friendly CMS. You know, you should call yourself that. No, we're like, oh, that feels good. And then the project grew and, you know, the clients got bigger and bigger. And then at one point, you know, we thought maybe it's not professional enough to call us the friendly CMS. So, you know, we got new taglines developed. And then the big irony was a couple of years ago when, you know, we actually, that really became a company and we got our headquarters and started to hire a lot of people. Then we had a chairman. He was actually the one who said, you know, why don't you call yourself the friendly CMS? You know, why did you let go of that? I mean, that's just one of your biggest assets. We're like, yeah, well, really? Do you think that works? He was like, yeah, hell yeah. And we're like, okay. and that was really wonderful that you can actually combine a good business with being friendly, and you actually have a good business because you're friendly and not the other way around.
Yeah, it's very much complementary. I think that happens a lot. The assumption being that a corporate vision or a very the larger businesses, larger clients that we work with and so on, that sometimes it can feel that you need to be cold and have a cold exterior and a very polished exterior. But that's not true at all. You're working with people, as they say, businesses with people. So it's more about getting the results and doing that in a way that, is as Umbrago does, in a friendly way, is a really powerful mix.
One of the most important hires we've done the last year is we finally got a CEO. So Umbrago is, we're around 30 people now, so it's still a small company, but you know, when it's started by a person that doesn't have a business background, it's very hard to manage a lot of people. But we found this guy who actually came from, he was VP of customer service and sales at a big European ERP vendor. But they were actually very different, despite that they were one of the biggest in Scandinavia. Then their support team, for instance, was called Planet Wow. And he was actually all about this friendly vibe. And it's really wonderful to see that you can bring someone on board who's much more businesslike than any other we've ever had in the company. Yet he's actually a higher advocate of being friendly and, you know, have that great sense of humor. That's also a big part of the Umbrago DNA that some of us might have forgotten in the idea of maturing the project.
Yeah, and it's definitely not forgotten now. And one of my favorite stories from last year is the brass band at the dinner at Code Garden. So the sense of humor.
You know, we all go to work every day, but it's such a big part of our lives. So if we don't enjoy it, if we can't have a laugh, where if you don't have a soul in what you do, then what's the purpose, right? Humor is a great driver in happiness at work.
And as you say, the core team, 30 or so and growing, it seems to be. But the thing that's really powerful above and beyond those 30 people is the community. And it would be interesting if you could share just a little bit about the growth of that community, not just in terms of the developer and the contributors, but the users and the whole, as it's grown over the years.
We reached 400,000 active installs of Umbrago. So that's real websites that's running, and we track that if a super admin logs in to Umbrago and then checks for updates. So it's a quite solid number, and the number is likely much, much higher. And on top of that, we have around 220,000 active developers or designers, people producing websites in the community. So that's people actively using our community site, which is called our.umbrago.org. It didn't start out that way. I mentioned this thing about that it took 7 months to reach 1,000 downloads. And you know, we have our annual Umbrago conference. And the first one, we had 23 people attending. It was a blast still. And, you know, last year we had sold out at 450 people, growing every year. The community is really our biggest asset. It's kind of like a chicken and egg thing, because if there wasn't a product, there wasn't a community. But today, it almost feels like if we didn't have our community, where would our, you know, best feature of Umbrago be? Because and I also think it's because it's grown over a decade, so there's been time to create a culture. I think if you grow extremely fast, you can't scale a culture like that. But you know, because the first year I replied to a majority of the questions asked on the mailing list and the forums. But then over the years, luckily, there was new people coming on board and taking over. But because they got a lot of help, and in a friendly manner, right? Not that that's a stupid question. Or online, people are so, they have so bad manners. But somehow, in the Umbrago community, we kind of established this culture of being friendly. So even if someone is like really, you can feel the people are really stressed out, right? They have a deadline, then something doesn't work in Umbrago, and then they write an angry post on the forum. People are really nice. I mean, people are like, oh, it sounds like you're stressed out. How can we help you? You know, try to guide people in the direction rather than, you know, telling people, hey, fuck off, don't speak like that. And because that it's been able to do that over the years, then it scales now. There's so many fantastic ambassadors in the Umbrago community, so that culture can spread out. Plus, we're really good to meet up in the real world as well, which is, again, you have these fantastic ambassadors in different countries that, you know, set up meetups. And again, there's a really friendly vibe. Sometimes you get the feeling that people is partly coming because they're using the product, but they are actually also coming to these meetups because they know they will have a great time. One of my favorite stories is two people met each other at a Code Garden, and a couple of years later, one of them was best man at the other guy's wedding. That was kind of cool. So it kind of tells it, you know, the purpose of doing all this was to make software, but, you know, a byproduct of what has happened has also been, you know, people getting friends all over our planet, which is really wonderful. And in these times, where the world looks like it does, there's nothing more important than, you know, meeting people from different cultures and getting an understanding of why we are as we are. So that's wonderful as well.
I kind of view it as a concentric circles thing. There's the Umbraco.core team, and then there's the hardcore ambassadors, as you describe them, and then there's a community who are integrated. Outside that community, or people who are actively involved in things like the forum, there are a lot of users and agencies and the people, clients and people that I work with who use Umbraco as a tool in their agency or as part of their business, but are just on the fringes of the community. And all of that is evidence of the impact and the usefulness of the software, of the tool, but also of the power of that community.
One of the best things is that a lot of these people also give feedback, because the real experts in how Umbraco feels as a product day to day isn't us. It's the editors out there that have to use the CMS every single day. And luckily, a good number of them are great at giving feedback, which then results in a much more polished editor experience, which is a very central thing for us. I know a lot of the other CMSs out there, they are very focused at always adding new features. Also, you know, rather than just staying as a really good CMS, then they need to be, you know, get into email marketing, social marketing, behavioral targeting, all these kind of marketing related features. We're sort of staying at being a CMS and then trying to be a really, really good CMS and keep on polishing small details in the product. That wouldn't be possible if we wanted to be good at many, many things. It's kind of funny. I have a son who was diagnosed with diabetes, and one of the first things the doctor said to us was, when we meet in a year, you will know, and they said that to our son, they said, you will be a better expert in diabetes than we are. And we've thought, hey, why are they saying that? But it's, of course, because he has to live with it every single day. And it's kind of the same, you know, humble approach we as a software vendor need to have to our users. You know, we're always focused on the next thing. You know, we don't use the tool in the same way every single day, but the editors do. So we really rely on not just this hardcore community who, you know, wants stuff to be faster or something like that. We also really need, you know, that feedback from agencies and editors saying, when I'm editing stuff and I accidentally go somewhere else, Umbraco comes up and say, hey, you're about to leave this page. Are you sure you want to do that? And then there's a button say discard changes and a button that says stay. And in the earlier versions of Umbraco, the stay button was actually grayed out and the discard changes was like in an alert-like color of orange. And that confused people. We never thought of that. Of course, we should have thought of that, but we didn't. And then because of that feedback, we could turn the stay button into being green and the discard changes button into being grayed out. So all these tiny details that we try to improve in every single release, that's a result of not only listening to, you know, the most hardcore community members, but especially the editors that need to use the product every day.
And I guess there's an element of responsibility in what you've built there, in that there are a lot of people who rely on the tool to some degree, either as part of their business, if for an agency, or a designer or developer who's using the tool to provide a service to their clients, but also to the end user, the editors, as you say, where it's fundamental to their online success, like their online presence. And all of that has a huge foundation for business success. And so it's really fundamental.
I didn't realize that when I started the project, right? So that's actually when I talk about that, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought, hey, we need to mature the company because there's an Umbraco solution produced for more than, you know, $200 million every single month. I mean, the impact that Umbraco has financially in the world is actually pretty insane. And of course, the demands also grow. But at the same time, it's open source. You know, most people aren't paying for this. But that doesn't mean that it's not important to them. There's just not, you know, a clear way of funding the project. A couple of years ago, it almost got too much. Then there was the feeling, hey, we need to grow the company, but I don't know how to grow the company. When something grows, there's also people going like, hey, would you be interested in competitors, hedge funds, etc. that was interested in buying the company, but it's never been the, you know, Umbraco hasn't been built to flip. So it was more like, okay, how can we get someone that understands the values of Umbraco and at the same time can help growing it while making sure that it's sustainable. That's also, you know, one of our very fundamental values, that, you know, it has to be sustainable. There's so many free products out there. You know, most web projects today rely on GitHub, that's more or less free, NPM, that's free, etc. But all these companies are bleeding money. So a lot of the, you know, foundation we rely on as web developers or web designers, you know, they aren't sustainable. And it means that either, you know, they will disappear or, you know, their business models have to change. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, Umbrago can be around for many, many years, and that as a company, we can be very sustainable, very inspired by the 37 Signals Basecamp people. That was also why all of a sudden we got this chairman of the board, we got our COO, to make sure, hey, you know, we can grow, we can make sure that Umbrago keeps being up to date, that, you know, we fix for every single tiny feature we add, we fix 15 to 20 bucks. And that's only possible because, you know, we are a mature company now and we're a sustainable company as well.
Yeah, that's an excellent segue, I guess, to talking about the future. Other than exactly what you've just said, is there a vision for where, like, for the future of Umbrago, for keeping it that level of sustainability that you're talking about?
We have plenty of stuff in pipeline, of course, and plenty of things planned for what we want to do. Our mission of Umbrago is to, you know, help deliver delightful digital experiences by making Umbrago friendly, simple, and social. And the whole idea of that is, first of all, the core product, which is the Umbrago CMS. It just needs to, every single release, we make a release at least every second month. It needs to be just a little bit simpler than it used to be. Back in the days, we sort of claimed that Umbrago was simple, but that's a fake promise, because what's very simple for me might not be simple for the editor that needs to, for instance, upload and maintain 500 media items every single day. But what we can do is making sure that, you know, the release of Umbrago that's coming tomorrow is a little bit simpler than it was the day before. So that's one very important aspect, that it's, we keep having this vision of small but important iterations of the Umbrago CMS. Then the other big thing we do is what we call the Umbrago Cloud. The idea is that the Umbrago CMS has always been extremely good at making sure that editors can iterate all the time. It's very easy to create and maintain all types of pages within Umbrago. But the other aspect, you know, CMS is, you know, a content management system. And it's very easy to say the stuff that editors are doing is content. But when you actually browse websites or, you know, apps that's powered by with Umbrago data, some of the content is actually also this, you know, the design, the UX, the developed features on the website. And we really think that it's crucial that it's easy to iterate over those things as well. That was why we built this thing called Umbrago Cloud, where we build a way to develop websites with the Umbrago CMS that really helps you iterate, that every time you want to create a new feature, you have a separate environment where you do that. You don't have to think about how do you set up an environment. When you're done and, you know, you want to put it out live, you click a button and it transfers to live, which means that you can iterate much, much faster. And we think that this is going to be, it's not for everyone. We think and hope that around 10% of new Umbrago installs will eventually use the Umbrago Cloud. But we think it's going to be a very, very important differentiator or a unique selling point, if we're going into marketing speak, of Umbrago in the future. And at the same time, it will help fund the open source project, because Umbrago's, you know, at the heart of the Umbrago Cloud is naturally the Umbrago CMS. And the Umbrago CMS will always be open source, always MIT licensed.
Thinking about things like the sustainability you're talking about, the focus on staying focused on being a CMS and the simplicity, things like Umbrago Cloud as another option for hosting and dealing with all of the challenges you just described. From an agency's point of view, or a creative agency who's using Umbrago either just because it's one of the tools that they deal with or that they're just discovering it, what do you feel is the best way for an agency like that to start to really understand Umbrago, to be able to explain it to their clients and to be able to sort of interact with the community?
There's a couple of things to that. If you look historically in our communication, we've been too focused on on developers, whether that's, you know, .NET developers or that just being web developers or designers. One of the things we've been quite bad at is actually explaining the benefits of Umbraco to end users and digital agencies. But over the last year, we've built up a small marketing department that's actually working on communicating those benefits. And by the time this podcast is live, we'll have the new Umbraco.com live. So my advice is, you know, of course, start by going to Umbraco.com, watch the videos, you know, read the about the benefits of Umbraco, because it's going to be much easier to understand at this point. And then from there, try Umbraco on the non-dangerous projects. That, you know, that's, in many cases, I've heard that Umbraco is kind of like a Trojan horse, where, you know, agencies start using Umbraco on a small campaign site. Then they realize, well, it was really easy to use. You know, sometimes we hear that Umbraco is three times faster to implement than some of the, you know, .NET Enterprise CMSs. And then learn by taking small steps, using it on more and more projects out there, and have the confidence of knowing that Umbraco is used for anything from small campaign websites to, you know, some of the largest corporate sites out there, some of the biggest digital campaigns. It scales extremely well. It can handle lots of content as well. So you're really in good hands. And then if it feels like it's a perfect fit for your company, then make sure that you send your developers to proper training. Because one of the advantages of Umbraco is that you can really tailor Umbraco and the editing experience of Umbraco to the purpose of the project. This also means, you know, it's the classic thing about with great freedom comes great responsibility. And most people absolutely love their Umbraco installs, but some people really hate it. You know, sometimes on Twitter you see, I hate Umbraco. And then we reach out to those people, and sometimes we see the solution that's been made for them. And it's a horrible editing experience, because the agency that who used it, or the developers and designers who build the solution, never had the time or chance to actually understand how Umbraco is supposed to work. That's extremely important that, you know, once you really start investing into Umbraco, make sure, you know, to get the proper training. There's masterclasses running all over the world. We have an online TV channel. So there's plenty of ways that you can, as an agency, that you can actually send your people to proper training. If you have enough people on training, you can also become a certified partner. And then you will be listed on the Umbraco site and actually start getting leads, etc. It's a really great investment if you do it that way. And then, of course, making sure that the people you involve in the projects gets a little time to, you know, to be active in the community, because the return on investment for that is very high. You will learn a lot from that. That's very important as well.
Yeah, I was just about to say that about get involvement in the community. It's something I've seen from my own experience, not just as a learning about Umbraco or the technology, but also just as a kind of improving as a in the skill of building websites and understanding the business as well. The community stuff can be quite powerful for that side too.
Yeah, but very inspiring. When you go to meetups, or if you go to, when you attend Code Garden, our annual Umbraco conference, you'll see what people have made with Umbraco, and people are really good in our community to, you know, to share pros and cons of the experience and share not only this is how we built, but actually also how we built it, what were the challenges, why did we do it this way. Then you look at it and thinking, oh, Umbraco is just a, you know, a CMS for small to medium-sized companies. And then you go to Code Garden and you realize, well, the European Union is powering websites in 26 languages using Umbraco. And, you know, when Felix Baumgartner jumped from space in the Red Bull campaign and it had 50 million views in an hour, that was also powered by Umbraco. And this was how they scaled it. You'll really learn a lot, and you'll realize that Umbraco is not just, you know, a WordPress clone, but it's actually a very powerful tool, and it's its own thing.
Yeah, I was about to ask if you had any good or favorite examples or stories of Umbraco being used in the real world, and particularly, I guess, within the agency world. If you have any other examples, those two are really good and it's inspiring. Do you have any others as well?
There's so many. So you'll have to stop me at one point. when you started something, you know, I remember in the beginning when, you know, I was driving in my car and, you know, you see a truck coming by with a logo, then I would tell my wife and my kids, oh, they use Umbrago. At one point, I stopped doing that because I can't drive almost anywhere in the world for 10 or 15 minutes without seeing some logo where I know that company is powered by, have something that's powered by Umbrago. But it's more the creative ways that people are using it. Like, I went to a music festival, and then I learned afterwards that, you know, the big screens at the stages, they were powered by Umbrago, you know, making where editors could make announcement throughout the music festival. In Dubai Airport, apparently a lot of the screens there are also powered by Umbrago. And it's kind of funny, you know, thinking, hey, we built a CMS for websites, but people use it for all kinds of things. I also learned that when you book hours or when you book time for like getting therapy in some places, the form you fill out is actually powered by Umbrago as well. So kind of the flexibility and the creative way that people use it is extremely inspiring. There's a brewery called Carlsberg, which is one of the biggest breweries in the world. They use the Umbrago cloud, where they have hundreds of brands, and almost all beer brand sites basically needs to do the same thing. But they also, you know, each brand have their own sort of identity, both in terms of how they look, but also in how they communicate and what's important. Maybe one beer is very much targeted football, another beer is very much targeted music. So Carlsberg made this thing where they have some kind of foundational baselines they use, and then they can roll out a new beer brand in less than a day. But that beer brand can actually, you know, they still have their own project and their own identity, and they can really do whatever they want. Also assign their own agencies to that specific brand. And I think doing stuff like that, I think that's really inspiring, that people keep push Umbrago to do new things and to really support the digital business out there. Another insane example is also, you know, one of the things you hear about Umbrago is that it's so flexible. There's a huge electronic chain in Scandinavia called Power. It's a bit like Dixon Electronics or something like that. Their website is Umbrago powered, and they have complete integration with their ERP system. And it sounds very unsexy, but it's crazy to see it in use, because in Umbrago we have this thing called a grid layout we introduced a couple of years ago. And the idea is that, you know, a lot of websites out there or a lot of CMSs, you know, you add a headline and then you have a rich text editor and you can insert images and all that kind of things. But that doesn't work in a responsive world or in a world where, you know, the content is, there's no such thing as what you see is what you get anymore, because your content will end up on loads of different types of devices, right? So a couple of years ago, we introduced something we call the grid view, which is actually a way where editors are actually working in some sort of grid system, and you can use whatever you prefer, whether that's, you know, Bootstrap or responsive BP or whatever, SERP, etc. But then editors, you know, they can add rows and they can add columns, and you can control all that, and they can insert videos and images and also, of course, rich text content. But because it's all in a grid, you know, you can set breakpoints and it respects different device types without the editor having to know this. But what I then saw with this Power website is that just like you could insert a video or image or content, then they could also just say insert product. And you know, when they click that one, they could search for a product either by the SKU or just by free text. Then it would appear in a list and the editor would click it and they would see, you know, thumbnails, etc. But what the editors actually did was they were actually searching in an ERP system called SAP, which is like the epicenter of enterprise software and the epicenter of complexity. But for the editor, it was just so straightforward. You know, they could drag products from a piece of enterprise ERP around on their website without even having to know it. And, you know, the digital marketeers, they could even change the prices of these products from within Umbrago. And when they did that, the e-ink price tags in their physical stores would actually update. Now, it was so crazy to see, you know, around 15 years ago, I built a CMS for making very simple websites. And all of a sudden, you know, I see a demo where people change price tags in physical stores at the same time as online. You know, that's really, talk about omni-channel business. And I think that's really one of the things I love about Umbrago, this crazy way that people use it.
And as you say, that focusing on the story like that, where you're focusing on something, on doing one thing, being a CMS and the simplicity, but the flexibility built into the platform opens up all these different stories of things that are happening. And in the next couple of episodes, the next few episodes, I'll be speaking to agency owners and other experts. We'll talk a little bit about the challenges and the opportunities of Umbrago within the design agency world. We'll talk about some of those case studies and examples that you've just given there, but also from the business side, if I'm running an agency, as I said, the challenges and the real opportunities that Umbrago brings to the creative and design agencies. So really appreciate your time, Neil. Thanks so much for that. And just to finish this off, can you remind us of the URLs that you mentioned in terms of where to go find the community and get involved?
If you just remember umbrago.com, that's the most important site. And from there, it will take you to all the places you need. But else, if you want to go straight to the community site, it's called our.umbrago.org.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And thanks for having me.
You can get all the links and notes from this episode on happyporchradio.com. If you enjoyed the show, please spare a moment to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thanks for listening.